As New York lawmakers grapple with the best way to ensure everyone in the state has access to affordable, high-speed internet, Assemblymember Kerry Werner's plan revolves around utilizing existing infrastructure in rural communities. And the Capital Region Democrat joins us to discuss her legislation, which has passed the Assembly and, as of Friday, June 4th, was in purgatory on the Senate side. Welcome back to the show, Assemblywoman.
Thank you, David. It's great to be here.
So you're gambling that in rural communities, utility poles, or more accurately, making it easier to utilize utility poles, represents a means of expanding access to broadband services. Piggybacking internet services on utility poles isn't new, though. So let's talk about what's new with your bill, starting with your idea for, I guess, revising the contracting process.
So this started with hearing that the Rural Resources Commission did a couple of years ago on rural broadband and why the rollout was so slow to reach the four corners of the state. And the question I asked then was, we have utility poles that bring power and landline phones to every home in the state, except, of course, those who choose to be off the grid, but that's a different conversation. So given that the infrastructure exists to deliver wired service to every household, why is it that we're finding it so difficult and so expensive to bring broadband on that same infrastructure to each household? And the answer I got was, well, it turns out that the way the PSC regulates this creates a complex procurement process, and also provides the mechanisms that increase the cost of delivering broadband service to each household. And so as I dug into that more deeply, I identified a number of ways in which we could improve the fairness of the use of poles to make it possible for broadband companies to cover more households. And the first two that we're dealing with have to do with the way they have to contract. So they have to come up with a contract for each pole, and there are something like seven poles per mile. So for every pole that they are going to run wire on, they have to have a separate contract. And this is, you know, anybody who's been in the private sector knows that the cost of doing a procurement for any given commodity is expensive. And so you can imagine if you're going to run 10 miles of wire and you have to have that many contracts, separate contracts, it adds time and money to the process. So what we've done is we've said, listen, the pole-owning companies have to do one contract for all of the poles in a given municipality, a town, a village, or a city. And by doing that, that will ensure that the broadband company has a faster path to get comparable service to every household in that municipality. So that's the first thing that we decided to do. The second thing we took on in this bill is the cost sharing associated with what's called the make-ready work. So when a broadband company chooses to expand into a region and they make the application to the pole owner, which is typically a utility, to attach to their pole, that starts off a process of make-ready design to make sure that the engineering on that pole can accommodate another connection. What we discovered is that what was happening once the broadband money became available in 2015 is in 2016.
And the money you're referring to is that like $500 million commitment the governor touted to try to expand broadband throughout the state.
Exactly. Not a small amount of money.
No.
As it turns out, not nearly enough, but not a small amount of money. And so once those monies became available and the broadband companies that received the awards began the process of doing the expansion that they had been awarded for, suddenly the pole owner companies were saying, oh, these poles, they need to be replaced. So you can't attach to them. They need to be replaced. And they were passing on the cost, 100% of the cost, to the broadband company. dramatically increasing the cost per mile for delivering that service. And so what that meant was that the award that they had gotten out of that $500 million went less far than it was anticipated to go.
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk about the fact that we don't have, in fact, Internet for all, despite the governor's assertion that 98% of the state is covered, one of the reasons is because of the way this make-ready work was done and the resulting determination that the broadband companies were going to have to pay to replace poles. Poles, by the way, which had already been identified for to be replaced as part of a capital maintenance plan, it drove up the cost and it reduced the number of houses that could be served. So what we did is, in this bill, is we said, let's make an equitable share. So if a pole attacher, if the make-ready work determines that the pole needs to be replaced, then the pole attacher is only responsible for the incremental cost associated with their attachment, not the entire cost of replacing the pole.
You're listening to the Capitol Press Room, and we're talking about an effort to expand access to high-speed internet, and our guest is Assemblymember Kerry Warner. Your bill memorandum mentions a new Department of Transportation fee as being another additional cost for internet service providers, which likely contributes to their reluctance to expand, making because it's not as cost-effective. What is this fee you're referring to, and why does it exist?
So this was negotiated as part of the budget 2 years ago. There's a substantial per mile charge that is a right-of-way fee that gets paid to DOT, and it is problematic. You know, it is you can imagine that we are spending public dollars to subsidize the delivery of a broadband internet, and then we're taking back a portion of it in this right-of-way fee. It's nonsensical. We need to repeal that. That will have to happen in the budget next year.
Presumably the right-of-way fee, though, is for some sort of maintenance or upkeep of these areas, though. Is that not a true reflection of the cost to the state?
That's an excellent question and one that I don't have an answer to.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would assume that was the rationale for why the fee was put in place. Is it $500 as the true cost? I don't know. But I will say that just the logic of this doesn't make any sense. So if we are going to pay public dollars to subsidize these companies to deliver service to underserved communities, and then we're going to take a fraction of it back in a right-of-way fee in order to fund DOT, what is that about? it doesn't make any sense that we would take money out of one pocket and then put it back in the other pocket. That's not achieving the public policy goal of delivering internet to everyone. And what we discovered in the pandemic is something that we instinctively knew, but now we can point to the real impacts of not having a 21st century infrastructure available to everybody in the state. And that is the public policy goal, to get internet to everybody, high-speed internet to everyone in the state. And so that being the goal, I think we should set up a regulatory and taxing structure that supports that goal, doesn't detract from it.
Why, though, when we have this conversation about internet, are we having it in that context that you're talking about, where government is trying to incentivize or regulate private internet service providers to take it upon themselves, essentially, to make sure that everyone is connected? Why isn't access just mandated, the same way telephone service was mandated, I think a million years ago, technically?
Well, I think that, we could do that, but just like they did with telephone and electricity, there was a subsidy to the companies that was a reflection of the fact that when you have a lower density area, the companies, the break-even point mm-hmm. is not met by the number of customers that they will acquire through the expansion. So the rural electrification model collected a tax from all ratepayers and then put that money into a fund that the electric companies could draw from to do the rural electrification. So there was, this has been a history of how in the U.S. we have brought utilities to all parts of the state or all parts of the country. So I don't know that we can make the argument that says if we just mandated it, the companies would have to do it. That's not been the way rural electrification or rural telephone work.
Right, but what you're describing is a system where the incentive was collected by the government and doled out by the government. Our system, though, basically relies on customers in densely populated areas to subsidize consumers in more sparsely populated areas, and it's up to the private company to decide how much profit they want to make from this arrangement. Why should we let private companies set those terms? Why not have the state dictate this and collect a tax? I mean, is it because we've proven with the $500 million investment in broadband that you talked about that we're just not good at maximizing our investment?
So again, yes, you could collect a specific internet tax and create a fund that private industry could draw from to do the expansion. It was not true when we did a rural electrification or rural telephone that the state owned the infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
It was still private industry, and it was a tax that was that created a fund that provided subsidies to private industry to do the expansion. So, sure, one way we could do it would be to create a specific internet tax, and then everybody who can afford it could pay into that fund and draw down on the subsidies could then be drawn down from that fund. But from a just from a logic perspective, that is in essence what happened, because we took money out of the general fund, which is funded by personal income tax, business
right.
income tax, and we dedicated $500 million of it to the expansion of broadband. So it wasn't a dedicated tax, but it was taxpayer dollars that were spent to try and get to rural broadband. Now, what I will say is that where I'm focused is, why did that money not go as far as it should have? So what got in the way of that money going as far as it should have? Because whether we have a dedicated internet tax or we simply say we're going to carve off a portion of the general fund to fund this, those dollars should go as far as possible. So
literally,
what's getting in the way? And, you raised the right-of-way tax, and I would say that's getting in the way. The cost sharing associated with the make-ready work is getting in the way. The way the broadband companies are taxed, they are taxed on the cost of construction. So when the utility company that owns the pole makes the broadband company pay more than they should have to attach to that pole, it not only increases the cost of the project from a pole attachment perspective, but it also increases the property taxes they're paying. So it would be analogous to if I said to you, hey, David, I would like to take that lean-to on the back of your house, and I'd like to move into that. Is that okay? Can I rent that from you? And you said to me, well, Carrie, that would be fine, but it's not really habitable yet. So how about you spend the money to turn that lean-to into an apartment for yourself, and then you pay me rent to live there. And then, oh, by the way, when my property tax assessment goes up because you've improved my property, you're going to pay that portion of the property taxes. So that's what we're saying to the broadband companies. And as a result of that, the cost per mile goes up, the number of houses that they can serve and break even goes down. And so that structure needs to be fixed. And it needs to be supportive of our public policy goal to bring everybody onto a 21st century infrastructure. This bill addresses two pieces of that. And I'm going to continue to work to try and address all of them. But this addresses two pieces of it, which is to say that if your poll is already targeted for replacement, if you have already built into your rate case money to replace that poll, so your ratepayers have already paid to replace that poll, you can't charge the broadband company the full cost of replacing that poll. That's a cost-sharing model that, frankly, the FCC has recognized and has put in place in all of the states that are governed by the FCC. New York is not an FCC state. We have our own Public Service Commission. So this really just brings New York State in line with what other states that are dealing with rural broadband are already. That's the structure that exists in those other states.
And finally, when you're at home and you find that your internet is struggling, what does it take for you to finally unplug and plug back in your router? Is there a breaking point for you, or does it really depend?
Well, it took me a long time to figure out that when my internet was struggling, that was what I needed to do. So I would say at this point, you know, if my browser thing is spinning for more than 15, 20 seconds, I get up and restart my router.
We've been speaking with Assemblymember Carrie Werner. She is a member of the Geek Squad at Best Buy. Assemblymember, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure, David. Thank you.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.